Well, hey, good morning. So glad to have you all here with us today. And if you know anything about Crosspoint, if you've been around for even just a little while, you know that the Christmas season doesn't fully kick off until we show a Clark Griswold clip. So it's the Christmas season now, people. Thank you. Yes, it's the Christmas season. We're so excited to have you here with us this morning as we kick off this new series, Oh, What Fun. If we haven't had a chance to meet yet, my name is Chris. I'm the pastor of Multiplication and Growth here at Crosspoint. So glad to be here with you all this morning. As we really do, we kick off the Christmas season. So this series, it's been one that we've been discussing. We've been talking about this Oh, What Fun for months now, because I don't know if you realize, but Christmas comes every year. And I also, I don't know if you realize, but the story is the same every year. So we got to figure out, what are we going to do different this year? So this year, you're really in for a treat. This series is one that we're going to start to look at. There are four descriptive names of Jesus. We're going to be looking at every single one of those over the next 4 weeks. So I'm so glad that you all are here today. And Christmas, it's this wonderful time, right? I mean, we sing about the wonder. We sing about the magic of it all. We sing about the joy of it all. And there's just something about Christmas that just, it brings about the inner child of us all. And when it comes to Christmas, though, there's the one that we want, right? There's the Christmas that you want, the one that you expect, or maybe the one you've had in years past. But then there's actually the Christmas that you get. And Jesus, he comes and he shows us that there's a third option. There's the Christmas that we need. And each week of this series, we're going to be looking at one of those descriptive names of Jesus and how he exemplifies those and what it tells us about who he is and how that particular name can bring some tremendous significance and wonder and meaning to our lives, especially this Christmas season. So this morning, if you can, as we get started, I want you to try something with me, okay? I want you to just pause for just a moment and think what it was like to be a kid at Christmas, okay? So just pause, take a breath, maybe think back to Christmas. You're 6 years old, you're 8 years old, you're 4 years old. Maybe your kid walked in the door. Maybe you see the commons this morning the way your child saw it when they walked in. You remember when they walked in today? Maybe you saw some of these kids. They walked in and their eyes lit up. I don't know, maybe you heard Brad, he's talking about his son when he saw Santa, his eyes just lit up. He didn't even know what to do. He was overcome. Like, that's what Christmas is like as a kid. It's magical. Actually, I saw a commercial during the Thanksgiving Day. Anybody watch the Thanksgiving Day parade? Is that still a thing? Anyone? I was watching it. We have a 7-week-old, and she was not watching it. She was asleep, but I was watching it. And I saw this commercial that I thought just captured what Christmas is like as a kid. Check this out.
When I grow up, I want to be Santa.
You can't be Santa. You're a girl.
Santa Claus has come to town.
Happy holidays!
Where's your beard, Santa?
Virginia, come with me. I want to show you something.
Let's go, Santa. We got work to do.
You see, with Christmas, there's a magic about it, right? There's a wonder about the Christmas season. There's this joy that wells up in us when we begin to think about the Christmas season, especially through the lens of a child. You see, as a kid, we would always drive to Toronto. I'm from Canada, if you didn't know. We would always drive to Toronto for Christmas every year. And so we jump in the car, and my family, we had it down to a science, right? I've traveled with other people, and it's like you get off the highway, and you stop for an hour or two, and you sit down and have a meal. No, my family, it was like, we have a 10-hour drive. We're going to be there in 10 hours. It was like, we got off the highway 15 minutes, that clock started. My dad dropped us off at McDonald's. We run in, go to the bathroom, get food. He goes to the gas station. Then he comes, he picks us up. We're back on the highway, 15 minutes, tops every single time. It was like we were like an IndyCar, like pit crew. You know, you ever watch one? It's like everything's just timed perfectly. That was me as a kid. We were in the car. We were traveling from the west end of the city to the east end of the city. I've got relatives on both sides of Toronto. Toronto's a big place. I don't know if you've been there. It's like, picture like Chicago, all right? So driving from one end of the city on Christmas Eve to the other end of the city, that was what it was like for me as a kid. So by the time we finally made it to my grandparents' house, it's like midnight, right? And we go to bed, but if you have any kids or if you remember what it's like as a kid on Christmas Eve, you don't really go to bed. I mean, the adrenaline's just like flowing. You could not sleep even if you like got dropped some melatonin. Maybe your parents did that to you, I don't know. You couldn't go to sleep. There was no way. You're sitting, you're waiting, you're listening for any sound that you might possibly hear, something. And here's the thing. Someone actually, I heard this week. They said that life, it consists of three stages, and it's described perfectly through the lens of Santa. And the first stage, we visit Santa, right? You remember this? Brad's talking about Gavin and Logan. They visit Santa. You go and see him. And the second stage, we start to recognize that we kind of are like Santa. And then in the final stage, we start to realize we're starting to look like Santa. Maybe some of you are there this morning. If you are, great. That's perfect. That's exactly where you should be. My brother and I, on those Christmas Eves, we shared this pull-out couch every year in my grandparents' basement, right? Doesn't that sounds like Christmas, right? I mean, you pull-out couch in the basement. That was us every year. And we'd go to bed once we got back to our grandparents' house, but we would just listen for any sound, anything that would indicate that there was some presence going on upstairs. There was some action upstairs. And then we would wait until it went silent. You remember doing this as a kid? It'd go silent. And so what do? You get out of bed and you'd sneak upstairs to just try and get just any look of what might be there. But what I realized as a kid, and it went on for every year, my grandfather, he would set a chair at the top of the stairs and sleep in that chair every single year because he knew what we were doing. It's because he actually did it when my dad was a kid. I asked my dad this weekend at Thanksgiving. He's like, oh, yeah, your grandfather, he used to sleep in a sleeping bag in the hallway every year at Christmas. That's what he did because he knew. He got it. He knew what it was like to experience the wonder, the magic of Christmas through the eyes of a kid. And so there was this wonder, there was this excitement, this joy. It's kind of like the first time you flew on a plane when you're a little kid. Maybe you remember. You walk into the airport and you're just like eyes wide. You're excited. You're walking through TSA and you're like high-fiving people. You don't do that now, but as a kid, first time you've ever flown, it's like everything is just magic, right? And then you walk down the gangway, and I don't know if it's called a gangway. Maybe that's a ship. I don't know. You walk down the path, and then there's the captain, and they maybe hand you those wings, and like everything about it is just, it's magical, right? Don't you remember what this was like when even the smallest details of Christmas would just blow you away? It would provoke this wonder in you, but something has changed as we get older, right? It seems like the excitement, the magic of it all, the wonder of it all, it dissipates for some reason. Could it be the disappointments in our life that maybe have moved us away from wonder and maybe a little closer towards cynicism? Or maybe it's our addiction to hurry, especially in this season. It's our addiction to hurry, and we start to neglect this aspect of life, this wonder, this joy, this magic, being able to experience everything in its fullness. Or maybe we dismiss wonder. Maybe we just say, that's what little kids do. It's something I grew out of. I don't do that anymore. And so I wonder, why don't we wonder anymore? I read a quote by G.K. Henderson. This is what he said, and this is so true. The world will never lack for wonders, but it's only going to lack for a lack of wonder. You see, our hope this Christmas is that we can rediscover the true wonder of it all. You know, pretty much everything about Christmas is a wonder, right? I mean, after all, we're celebrating the moment that the God of the universe broke into our world. And honestly, the way that he came was just, it was unpredictable. I mean, he didn't come as royalty, you know, riding in on this big throne. No, he came as a newborn baby, helpless, unassuming. Not in a way that anyone would have predicted. His parents were homeless. They were immigrants. They were running from a cruel dictator. And yet this child was God in the flesh, coming into our world. And writing about 700 years, even before the birth of Jesus, the prophet Isaiah, he wrote this, and he described our coming king. And this is what he said, Isaiah 9:6. He said, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace." There are four descriptive names of Jesus that are used right here. These are the four that we're going to be walking through over the next several weeks of this Christmas season. Did you catch them? They're right here again. Wonderful Counselor. Jesus is a Mighty God, our Everlasting Father, and the Prince of Peace. This morning, we're going to be looking at one particular name and the tremendous significance that comes from it. It's the first one. It's Wonderful Counselor. And every time that I've ever read that Isaiah 9 passage, I've always, as I read it, I saw a Wonderful Counselor, and I jumped to the counselor part. I don't know what it is, but I always focused on that piece of it. And I always think maybe it's because I recognize, like, hey, we have this incredibly knowledgeable, we have this savvy counselor. It's at our beck and call. Like, why wouldn't I want to think about Jesus in that way? Like, he's like Dr. Phil, but Dr. Phil looks like a lightweight. I mean, Jesus can do anything, can change anything for us. But today we're going to focus on the first part of the wonderful part of who Jesus is. Actually, in several translations, if you look at this passage, you'll see that the wonderful part of it is actually separate from the counselor part. It's wonderful, and then it's counselor. So what does this mean that Jesus is? It means that he's wonderful. When you translate that word from English back to the original Hebrew that it was written in, the word in Isaiah 9, this wonderful word, is actually translated as pele. And even though in our English it comes across as kind of an adjective describing Jesus as wonderful, it was actually a noun. It was actually a noun. So it's not just saying that Jesus was this wonderful thing. It was saying that Jesus actually is a wonder. And this word pele, it means extraordinary. It means hard to be understood, astounding, in a way that causes this intense amazement. That's who Jesus is. And when I first read that the word pele was wonder, I immediately thought of Pele, obviously, right? I mean, that's what you guys are all thinking. I mean, Pele, that's not his name. If you don't know who that is, he was a soccer player in Brazil like a long time ago. Incredible. I played soccer. So that was my first thought, was Pele, right? Of course his name was Pele, because everything he did on the field was wonderful. It caused amazement. It caused excitement. People had never seen some of the things he had done. His name was Edson, but they called him Pele because he was wonderful. Created this intense, intense amazement. And so Isaiah, he isn't just saying that the Messiah is wonderful. He's saying that the child who is born to us is actually a wonder. In an article in Psychology Today, Dr. Neil Burton, he defined wonder in this way. This is what he said. He says, "Wonder is a complex emotion involving elements of surprise and curiosity and contemplation and joy. It's perhaps best described as a heightened state of consciousness and emotion brought about by something singularly beautiful, rare, or unexpected." You see, wonder, it's different than just curiosity. It's different than just surprise. You see, knowledge can extinguish curiosity. Familiarity, it quenches surprise. It gets rid of the surprise of things. But wonder, it seems to grow. It seems to deepen. It seems to become a little more full, like the Griswold family Christmas tree, the more you seek to know and understand it. And true wonder, it has this depth about it. It creates this overwhelming sense of greatness. For example, you guys all know what Earth looks like from space, right? Maybe you've seen a picture, right? You've seen a picture like this where you start to see the curvature of the Earth, and you kind of have an idea of what it's like. Now imagine you got a ride on SpaceX. You're going up, you get one of the first rides, and imagine you going up and you're seeing this, and you're like, you know, I've seen a picture. I know what it looks like. I saw it in a textbook one time. I'm not even going to look out the window. You can take my window seat. I don't need it. I know what that looks like. No, you wouldn't do that. You'd want to see the clouds. You want to see the weather formations. You'd want to see the curvature of the earth. You would want to see it all. See, researchers, they call this the overview effect. It's this feeling that you get when you look at something, even if it's something you know, even if it's something familiar, when you look at it in its entirety. It reminds me, remember those first few times you look through a microscope when you're a little kid or maybe in a science class and you start to see something maybe you've seen 100 times, but you begin to see the depth of it. You begin to see it in its entirety, all those small, amazing little things that starts to create this wonder about something that maybe you knew all along, but you began to experience it in such a new way. You see, Jesus, he is a wonder. 2,000 years ago, a wonder. It broke into our world, and they called him Jesus. And the truth is, everything about Jesus, it led people to wonder about him. Everything about him was unique and different and absolutely amazing. Everywhere he went, it was like he would have these crowds following him, and he would teach, and he would do these signs and these wonders. And it was like people had never seen anything like it before. And their jaws just dropped in amazement and wonder. His words were wonderful. They invoked wonder out of people. And Jesus, he actually, one of the longest continuous sermons that he ever taught was called the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew, one of his closest followers, one of his friends, one of the authorized biographers of Jesus' life, he actually records it, Matthew 5 through 7. And this is one of the longest ones you'll ever find Jesus teaching. And it covers so many different things. Jesus is talking about anger and marriage and fidelity and forgiveness. He talks about loving our enemies and giving to those in need and prayer and anxiety and judgment and wisdom. He just covers everything in this. And as he's teaching, there's this sense of wonder about it. There's this amazement. And it's like he takes the conventional thinking and it just flips it on his head. And people looked at Jesus and their jaws dropped. This is what Matthew says. It says, when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds, they were amazed. They were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. You see, when he finished, those who were there, those who were watching and listening to his words, they were amazed. They were filled with wonder. And here we are 2,000 years later, and his words, they still continue to fill our hearts and our minds with wonder and with amazement. His teachings, they've endured thousands of years of scrutiny. They've been translated into over 1,400 languages. They've crossed almost every cultural and ethnic barrier known to man. Jesus' words were wonderful. They are wonderful. It's because he was full of wonder. And it doesn't just stop there. Jesus' actions, they led us to wonder. Almost everywhere you turn in those first four books of the New Testament, these are called the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, these authorized biographers that followed Jesus everywhere that he went. Almost everywhere you turn, you'll find a story of Jesus doing a miracle. And you see the lame walk and the blind see and the deaf hear. And actually, there's one right here where Matthew describes it. Matthew 15, he says, Jesus left there and he went along the Sea of Galilee. Then he went up to the mountainside and he sat down. Wherever Jesus went, crowds, they followed him. And it says a great crowd came to him, bringing the lame and the blind and the crippled and the mute and many others. And they laid them at his feet. And what's it say? It says that he healed them. The people, they were amazed at what they had seen. The mute speaking, the crippled made well, the lame walking, the blind seeing. And they praised the God of Israel. You see, the people, they were amazed. Can you imagine Can you imagine for just a moment what it must have been like to be sitting at the feet of Jesus and to see the blind seeing for the first time, the deaf hearing for the first time, the crippled getting up and walking? Can you imagine the wonder, the awe, the pure joy of that? I'm not sure that we truly can, but I saw a video this week that actually it struck me because, well, this actually hits really close to home. Check this out.
Okay, you ready? Okay. I got you some new sunglasses.
Huh?
Okay.
But why did you make them park there?
Because.
Weird. Okay, put them on now. What? Okay.
Look at your case. And tell me what color that is.
Wait, are these my color?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. This is red. Oh my gosh. And that's white.
Look at the sign up there. What's that?
And oh my gosh, that's yellow.
Ah, don't go out there.
And this is black. And this is white.
What color is that car?
Oh my gosh, it's kind of toy cars blue.
Mm-hmm.
Finally I can see the colors. Ooh, and that has a blue outline, kind of yellow, kind of.
Come here.
These are awesome.
Here, hold my hand.
Oh.
Come here.
My.
And look, what color is the bush right there?
It's green and yellow and kind of blue and. Oh, I better put these back on.
And look at these guys over here.
Mama, can I wear these to school?
Yeah.
I want to wear them forever.
Here, look.
I'm going to wear these forever, right?
Look at these guys.
Oh, my gosh. Mom, thank you so much.
You're welcome. What color is that guy?
This guy's kind of blue with kind of a red crotch there. This guy has kind of blue pants, red shoes. White shirt, yellow head, and a.
And look at that! Look at this guy up there. Look at that. What's that look like?
Too much colors for me to really tell, though.
Is that a lot of color?
Oh yeah, that is like blue and yellow and red. And oh my gosh!
You see, my brother's colorblind, and he has those glasses, and. I remember the first time you put them on. Can you imagine? Can you imagine walking through life? There's different levels of it, but can you imagine walking through life and just kind of seeing gray? Everything? Everywhere you see. Just kind of seeing gray. Can you imagine what it must have been like to sit at the feet of Jesus and to see the lame get up and walk? The blind to see for the first time, the deaf, the people who had never heard anything, their ears open up and to hear. I don't know if it would have been like that little boy looking and seeing colors and the red crotch and everything. I don't know if it would have been like that, but can you imagine the wonder, the awe that must have created in these people to see for the very first time. You see, Jesus, he's still healing. He's still changing lives. Jesus, he came to make all things right, the things that had gone wrong in our world. And he came to undo the things that only he can undo. And he still brings physical healing. And we also see his power at work when he brings healing to our hurts, to our relationships, our disappointments, our failures. You see, the wonder of Jesus is that he can bring wholeness to even the most painful and broken parts of our lives. You see, Jesus is wonderful. But perhaps the most wonderful part of Jesus is the very thing that we celebrate at Christmas. It's his birth. At Christmas, we celebrate that the wonder of God, that God himself He came to be God with us. Alistair McCarthy, he reminds us, this is what he says. He says, check this out. God didn't send a subordinate. He didn't send a subordinate to redeem us. No, he chose to do it himself. I recently came across a story about Billy Joel, this gift that he gave to his daughter, a 12-year-old daughter. He was in L.A. and she was in New York, and he wasn't going to be able to be there for her birthday. So he called her in the morning, and he's like, sweetheart, there's going to be a present on your doorstep. I promise, 7 p.m., present on your doorstep. It's going to be huge. Look for it. You'll know it's from me. I'm so sorry I can't be there. So 7 comes around, and then there's a knock on the door. She goes out, and she sees this just massive, massive present. Starts tearing the paper. Can you imagine? It's 7 foot tall, but you're just tearing the paper off. And out walks her dad from this box. You see, that's what Jesus did. He came to be with us. This is what it says in Luke 2. So they hurried off and they found Mary and Joseph and the baby who was lying in the manger. When they had seen him, they spread the word concerning what it had been told to them about this child. And all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds had said to them. You know, few really understood what was happening in this moment. Those who encountered this child in a manger, they knew that they were witnessing something breathtaking, something remarkable. And so the shepherds, they rushed off. They rushed off when they heard the news that this baby had been born. They were overcome with this joy about the news of this child, and they spread it everywhere. And all who heard were amazed. I'm curious, how many of you, do you remember the eclipse that happened about 2 years ago? Did anyone see the eclipse? You remember buying the glasses? They like kind of sold out everywhere. You had to kind of fight for them a little bit. I was working at a church on the west side of the city, and I remember this day. Like, it was just unbelievable. Our staff went outside, and we had one pair of glasses between like the six of us. And we walked outside. I just remember passing the glasses off to one another and like just staring, kind of like staring at one of these lights. They're very bright. And you just, like, that's what looking at the sun is like normally. But you put these glasses on and this eclipse is happening. And you're seeing this thing that you see every single day. And you don't even think about it. But you were seeing the sun in such a way that you had never seen before. You might never see again. And it just filled you with this awe, this wonder. Author Margaret Feinberg, she actually got to experience the full eclipse. We didn't get like the whole thing here. It was like partial. There was totality. You know, I'm not a doctor or a scientist or anything, so I don't really know. But there was totality. She got to see the whole thing where it like completely went black. This is what she says. She says, temperature, it plummeted. Darkness descended. Jaws dropped. We stood in holy awe of a heavenly display wrapped by celestial power and beauty. A black fireball compelled strangers to erupt in wild applause at the airport. Can you tell she's an author? No one talks like that, right? I mean, come on. But there was this wonder, this awe, this magic about the eclipse that just brought about this incredible unity, this eruption of joy, this eruption. If you didn't see it for yourself, check this out. This was full totality in South Carolina. Check this out. I was in the middle of the afternoon. Did you see how black it got? It was wonder that brought that crowd together. It was this amazement, this sense of awe that brought a crowd of thousands of people all across the country. I don't know if you remember this, but it was totality in a very certain path. Casper, Wyoming was a random one. Nashville, Tennessee, South Carolina. There was just these random spots that had Airbnbs and hotels booked up years in advance because people knew that they were going to see something that they might not ever see again. It created this awe and this wonder. It's what drew these people together. It's what encouraged this unity. And it makes me want to ask, what if you could continue the awe and the wonder of the eclipse every single day? Would you want that? And as I watched those videos, I started to read through the comment section. And as I read it, I saw this over and over and over again, these statements that was saying, you know, it was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. It was awesome. It was absolutely unbelievable. It was life-changing, someone said. It was just wonderful. I've never seen anything like it. And as I read those comments and I started to think about this awe and this wonder and this excitement, I thought, this is what people must have felt like when they saw Jesus. This is what it must have been like to sit at the feet of Jesus and to see him do these incredible things, to hear the words that he taught, to see people get up off their mats and walk for the very first time. It had to have created this awe, this wonder. And so I want to ask, what if we could continue that awe and wonder that they experienced and that they experienced when they sat at the feet of Jesus? What if you could continue that every single day? And I believe it's because of Jesus that we actually can. You see, the words, the actions, the incarnation of Jesus, they can still strike us with this ongoing sense of awe and wonder when we allow ourselves to be captivated by him. You see, the truth is, God is still with us. His spirit is still living in the heart of every Jesus follower. He's still speaking. He's still doing miracles. He will always be wonderful. Do you guys remember back in the heyday of the Peyton Manning era? Do you guys remember this? Like when the Colts, you could just expect 10 wins a season, at least, right? I mean, I grew up with the Colts, like 12 wins, 12-4, they're going to the playoffs, getting a bye. Like, that was normal. I don't know what to do anymore when it's like, oh, we're 6-5, and I have no idea if we're going to win every week. It's kind of heartbreaking. But back in the day when Peyton was there, you could go to a game, you could walk in the doors and expect wonder. You could walk in and expect a sense of awe. A sense of excitement that something incredible. Marvin was going to make a catch you've never seen before. Reggie Wayne was going to make an incredible catch. I mean, it was just, there was this sense of wonder about it. Maybe you're not an NFL guy. Maybe you're an NBA guy. Maybe Reggie's your guy. I don't know. Maybe you'd go to the games at Conseco and you'd walk in the doors and you just knew. You knew. Even if it was an off night. Reggie's going to go 11-12 from the free throw line. He's going to hit 6-8 from three. Pacers are going to win. He might throw a choke sign up at Spike Lee. I don't know. I mean, you never knew. There was this wonder about it. A couple weeks back, Kurt, he shared with us, there are a few different pathways that take us into the dark. And one of those is control. And we all have probably experienced this one way or another, especially at this time of year. But as we discovered, when we let light in and illuminate those places of control, on the other side of that is curiosity, which is another word for wonder. So throughout this Christmas season, we're going to be talking about the difference between the Christmas that we want and really the Christmas that we need. And if we're honest, as much as we try and create the Christmas that we want, as much as we try and make sure every single kid is smiling and in the family picture and you've all got the color coordinating outfits on, the Hallmark Christmas is going to happen, as much as you try and control it, it just doesn't always go the way we want it to. But maybe there's something in the midst of this. You see, Jesus, after all, he's referred to as the light. John, he wrote that the word, that Jesus came to give light to all of life. And that's what Jesus wants to do for you this Christmas season. To turn our control, the tension of that, our expectations, to turn it into wonder, curiosity, awe. And because of Jesus, we can do that. I want to invite you to approach this Christmas season with that kind of anticipation. Consider this an invitation this Christmas to be wide-eyed, to be like a child walking through the doors into the commons for the first time at the Christmas season, lit up at all the lights, to notice those things, to not rush right past, to not let the cynicism of Christmas past, of life, of the hurts, of the pains, of the responsibilities of life, to not let those things weigh down the wonder of the Christmas season. Let this Christmas reawaken in you a childlike faith that expects something amazing to happen. In fact, it's one of the next steps today. Go ahead and grab your connection card, flip it over to the back. We give you next steps each and every week to help you walk out these things. And there's one main challenge I want to challenge you with this week. And I want to extend this to every single person. Every day this Christmas season, whether you're a praying person or not, whether you're not so sure about this God or Jesus thing at all, I want you to try this. Give it a shot. Test it out. I want you to pray this prayer every single day. Jesus, I am ready to see your wonder. I want you to open your heart, your eyes to the God who's with you, who still is working and in the midst of your everyday life. Look for him in your work days and your weekends and in your meeting-filled Monday and your lazy Saturdays. Search for him in that snowy sunset that might be coming later on this evening, that the hearty laughter of the kids or the relatives or your neighbors, your time with your family, your friends. I want you to pray for and I want you to expect wonder. For when you search for God, you will discover him. Would you stand with me in prayer this morning? Jesus, I am grateful this morning for what the Christmas season means for all of us. That we get to every single year, again and again and again, experience the awe and the wonder of this season. God, I pray that for each of us, that maybe we would see this Christmas season a little differently this year. That maybe we would have this childlike faith again, that we'd have this childlike wonder and amazement and awe about it. And God, I pray that each of us would pray for and expect your wonder.